Everyone has a story. How they got here, where they met along the way, the choices they made, the dreams they are chasing. Welcome to Anthologies of Hope. Welcome, 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 and thank you so very much for joining us on this first ever episode of Anthologies of Hope. Have you ever heard a friend share something and then you're like, wait, you too? I'm dealing with the same thing. I didn't think anyone else could possibly understand this. That's often the case with mental health. We get stuck inside our own heads and never want to talk about it. Well, that's where this podcast comes in. First, allow me to introduce myself. I'm Rick Osowski, your host for the upcoming seasons of Heart to Hearts here on Anthologies of Hope. I am not a mental health professional in any way. I'm simply a mental health advocate with a passion for enabling others to tell their story. One recurring theme you will hear is knowing when to ask for help, or knowing you need to, but not sure how. We hope these conversations will share some key tools you can use on your mental health journey for strength, resilience, and growth. In her Netflix special, Nanette, Hannah Gadsby says, "You learn from the part of the story you focus on." This is the same with mental health. This is the same as physical health. If you don't go to the gym and work in a specific muscle group, you're not going to get stronger. This is exactly the same for me. I can quite confidently say I've never been able to progress in a bench press in any way. I like going to the gym. I do a lot, but I just don't ever make any progress. So I don't work on my chest. It doesn't improve. I don't get stronger. Makes sense, right? So how is your mental health any different? If you don't have the hard conversations, if you don't have the difficult conversations with the people you need to have them with, how will you ever make any progress? So what can you expect in this season of Anthologies of Hope? I'm assuming we'll shorten that to Anthologies at some point, since I've already said Anthologies of Hope way too many times. But we're open to suggestions, and we'll, you know, wait to hear what you guys say. We'll have a season structure where we're going to break down into a couple of seasons. The first couple of seasons will be intimate conversations from members of the Heart Camp family. If you don't know what Heart Camp is quite yet, hold on a moment and we'll dig into that. Each week, we'll also add guest-inspired songs to a Spotify playlist you can find at anthologiesofhope.com/playlist. These songs will range from happy time songs that you'll want to sing out loud, songs that you can go to when you need a good cry, or songs that may literally tell our guest story. No matter what musical genre you're into, you'll definitely want to check it out. And probably sing along. Where will we go once we're done with Heart Camp? Through our interviews here, we hope you'll find some inspiration for your journey, hear from you down the road, and if so inspired, bring your story to an episode as well. So we've mentioned Heart Camp a few times, but you're probably wondering, what exactly is Heart Camp? Well, that's a good question. Starting out, we'll bring you conversations from the community of folks who have met and connected through the two-day workshop focusing on authenticity, bringing your heart to work, and mental health. This is Heart Camp. For more details on Heart Camp specifically, you can check out heartcampwithjamie.com. Heart Camp is the brainchild of Jamie Torkowski. If Jamie's name sounds familiar, it's because he's the founder of To Write Love in Our Arms, an excellent mental health advocacy, awareness, and action nonprofit providing access to resources for all aspects of mental health, including but not limited to depression, addiction, self-harm, and suicide. It's no surprise that the people that are inspired by Jamie's sense of purpose, community, and hope also share the same sense of common bond to want to share their own personal stories to help others. Now, jumping into each episode, we'll share some background on the mental health journey of each guest, what made Heart Camp so special to them, what they've done since Heart Camp, and then what community means to them, and then we'll discuss their song selection. Each week, we'd like to remind you that if you're in a time of crisis, we'll be covering a range of potentially difficult and triggering topics. Please use this as a warning to seek help and come back once you are in a more positive season. If you are, in fact, in need of help, an abundance of national and international resources can be found on the Find Help pages of To Write Love in Our Arms and Hope for the Day, two amazing mental health nonprofits. You can find To Write Love in Our Arms at TWLOHA.com. and Hope for the Day at hftd.org. Both of their Find Help pages are at /find-help. Our guest this week is Anna Johnson. She was an attendee of the first ever Heart Camp group in January of 2018, hosted in Melbourne, Florida. I had a blast interviewing Anna and discussing her mental health journey and how it's made her a better friend, a better daughter, and a better nurse through both the wins and the losses every step of the way. So without further ado, the first ever Anthologies of Hope interview.
Rick. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Anna. I am 25. I live in Birmingham, Alabama right now. I work as a nurse, and I'm actually in nurse practitioner school.
And what kind of nurse are you?
I am a psychiatric nurse for children.
That seems like a very, I would say, interesting, exhausting, as well as rewarding job at the same time.
It is all of that and more. It is definitely one of those things that's very challenging, pulls at your heartstrings, but the kids make it worth it. So I love it.
At the end of the day, I imagine there's quite a lot of emotional stress that goes on there, and then coming home and you needing to be able to decompress and being able to distance yourself from the, as you were saying, just all of the tugging at your heartstrings. So it's to me, it makes sense why you would end up at Heart Camp and kind of some of the journey you'd have here. So I'm interested to see where our conversation takes us here.
Just as far as just taking care of myself when I first started on the job, I had come from another job that was also very strenuous. I was working with people that were homeless and saw a lot of mental illness and substance abuse there. And so realized that I was putting too much compassion to what I was doing. And so I was getting burnt out really quickly. So going into this job, I made sure that I had a therapist on board to go and talk to make sure that I can make those boundaries. So that way I could still be empathetic towards these incredibly broken souls, but at the same time, be able to take care of myself. I make sure to have some sort of mental health day, you know, about once a month or so, just to decompress and honestly just let creative outlets out. I love to hang out with friends, so making sure that I get that time in. And honestly, just making sure that I'm taking care of myself, like just eating the right foods and exercising, getting enough sleep, which I know sounds redundant, but it really does make a difference.
Well, it sounds not necessarily redundant, but it sounds so simple. But it's something that when you end up looking into a lot of people that put a lot of the pressure on themselves, that build up situations that are artificially more difficult than they need to be, it ends up being they're not taking care of themselves with those simple things. So it seems like something simple to do, from getting rest, getting exercise, eating right, things like that. But that self-care is really paramount in structuring a lot of the heavy lifting that you have for the mental health kind of strategy that you just described.
Oh, definitely. And it's something that I think is helping professions, or anybody in the helping profession, whether you're a counselor, whether you're a nurse or social worker, or even that when you're just in a job that requires you to put others often among yourself, it's so hard for us kind of people to really put ourselves first, because we're used to putting others first and we like putting others first. And so we end up just putting ourselves in the back burner. And while it may seem so simple, I know when I first started doing self-care, it was so difficult just because I felt like I was being selfish. But then realizing at the end of the day, if I'm not taking care of myself, then I'm actually doing more harm than good to those around me. So, and that's something, some of those self-care strategies and the eating right, exercising, you know, maybe having a therapist, writing, doing things like that. Those are all things that Jamie talked about too. And that was a session that we had. And it's one of those things where, again, it wasn't a mind-blowing session where we were told new ways how to take care of ourselves. It was things that we've been told time and time again. But again, it's, you know, are we actually putting the time and energy into ourselves, which again, a lot of us don't do, or a lot of us think that that's selfish, but in the long run, it really isn't.
Everything that you mentioned, kind of the beginning of this, built a very sound strategy, a very strong, I would say, practice, or your own mental health practice. So is that something that you built over time? You mentioned having a therapist on board before moving into the nurse role. With all of that, it seems like that would be a lot to kind of discover overnight. So is there growth in there? Did you build on that little by little? Was that something that as you went through some of your previous work and found additional resources, you just kind of added on and grew that progressively?
So it was definitely not an overnight process. My therapy story started when I was in college. My anxiety and depression grew a lot more than usual during my sophomore year. I didn't really know what was going on. And so I started looking around for a couple of therapists and initially went to one at my college. And then over the summer, I ended up connecting with one in Birmingham. And so I just ended up driving back and forth from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham. So I've actually known this therapist for over 5 years now. Over the years, we've just been able to build that connection. But I have definitely come a long way as far as self-care goes. So being in nursing school was very hard. A lot of people find it very hard to put themselves first. So I remember just running myself to the ground as far as studying goes. And then I was trying to do ministry at a local church. And so I was running myself short there. And so honestly, it took learning the hard way a lot to realize that self-care was important. I found myself emotionally breaking down at times. I found myself having even suicidal thoughts at moments. So it really took a lot of those events over and over for me to finally realize that I really did have to take care of myself. And so, and then I ended up going to Nashville for that first job. And again, had to learn some of those same things when I put so much compassion and so much time into that job. I again found the therapist, again went through the same thing. And so finally, when I got to Birmingham, it began to click a little bit more. And so I started becoming more assertive and realizing, okay, I need this. So there are days where I actually call in sick to work because my mental health may be terrible. But at the end of the day, I know that's what's best for me. So it definitely was not an overnight process. I would say from where I started up until now, it's been a 5.5 year process.
That's a pretty powerful process for the 5.5 years. And you seem to have a good, an excellent even grasp on knowing some of the tools that you have at your disposal to do that. And the fact that therapy was such a powerful option there, again, with the between school and being in nursing school. We have between Amanda, my wife, and I, we have a number of friends who are in the nursing profession. And it's very similar, very relatable to the experience that you just mentioned, as far as putting everyone else before you in the profession, as well as peers in the nursing program, and then kind of coming home, running yourself down, and even putting, you know, partners in relationships ahead of yourself. So that is something where, again, as you mentioned, as you coined it, the helping professions, it's something where a lot of these skill sets are paramount, much more so than just even the professional on the job learning, but the what can you do to take care of yourself, let alone just take care of the patients. When you were in college and as you started doing some of the therapy practice, was that something that you felt empowered to do, or was it something that you found and just kind of knew you needed, or how did you end up getting into that, and what was your mindset going into it originally?
that's a great question. So I knew I needed to go at first, but I actually had a really bad experience with a school counselor in the eighth grade. I suffered from an eating disorder back in middle school and up until high school and college as well. And at the time I had lost a lot of weight, and I believe some of my friends were concerned, and so they sent me to this school counselor who essentially just interrogated me with question after question after question. I ended up crying, and I was just very nervous that that was going to be the same experience. But after just realizing the impact that that anxiety and depression were having on my life, I just said, I've got to at least try. And so actually the first time I went to therapy was not a similar experience, but it was a very uncomfortable experience. I was with a psychologist, very stern and not a good fit at all. So I ended up crying in my car, and then I got a recommendation for somebody else at the school counseling center. That was a lady, and we ended up clicking really well. So you honestly just have to find that fit too. Once I got going, I did want to do it, but definitely it was hard. I didn't realize how much therapy was going to give me insight and bring things up into my conscious mind. There were a lot of emotions that came with it. So yeah, but it's originally something that I knew I needed to do, but didn't really want to do. But at the end of the day, I really did find that I was benefiting from it, and I wanted to continue. And my college pastor actually found me my current counselor in Birmingham, and I've been seeing her ever since.
That's awesome. That's a great way to have a almost word of mouth connection there. And it'd be such something that would work out where, again, sticking with it, knowing that the first couple of times, maybe they weren't the best fits. That's not the end of the road, because that's something that is a common theme with a lot of the interviews that we're doing with the podcast, where therapy is a known tool, is a known resource, but it is something that through many tries have discovered that the first time, the first couple times isn't something that is a perfect fit there. Maybe it was to get out of a certain point, but it wasn't a long-term, you know, therapist, patient relationship that was going to thrive. Something where maybe it's the third, the fourth try where you end up nailing it. Because similarly, again, it's something where it is a medical professional in some way, and it's not always where whenever you go for a consult on, say, a broken arm or a broken leg, you're not always going to kind of stick with the first doctor you ever see, or you may get second opinions. So we end up thinking more negatively about something that is wrong with me when I go to a therapy session and it doesn't feel like the right fit, as opposed to it's just, you know, two pieces that aren't going to connect for whatever reason. So having the ability and having the determination to kind of stick it out and keep going to kind of find some of that when you have the availability, obviously, depending on a number of circumstances, you may not have that many options for available therapists and things like that. But depending on, you know, location and geography and a number of things, and even now the availability to have remote connectivity with therapy through apps and services like Talkspace and things like that, where it kind of really opens up the availability to get access to therapy is really beneficial. Because I myself had something similar where I first started seeing a therapist back in North Carolina a couple of years ago, and it was great. It served its purpose for the time. I moved, and it definitely wasn't a situation where it was the kind of relationship that could be done over the phone or remotely. But then once I got here and I reestablished myself and figured something out, I got a good recommendation from word of mouth. And I actually just had a session today, and I usually walk in kind of not knowing what I'm going to talk about and then come out 45 minutes later having talked the whole time. So to me, that's a good sign where that's a good fit, and I can definitely do a brain dump there. So it's nice to see that you did stick with it, and it is fruitful, and it is something that's very beneficial for you.
Oh my goodness. I cannot tell you how grateful I am for my therapist. I'm a little bit opposite from you. I usually email my therapist a list of different things that I want to talk about, because usually I forget. And so, but I actually just had a session myself on Monday, and I hadn't sent her a list, but I ended up talking for the entire 50 minutes on some different things that I wanted to. And, you know, again, just having that rapport for over 5 years, and then just also having similar struggles as well. I think it's great that if you know, different therapists have been through different trials themselves, where they can be relatable. It's just so powerful. And you feel like, okay, that person's actually, they know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Or, okay, they haven't lived this perfect life. I mean, again, it's just been really incredible as how much I've grown and what I've learned. And mostly it's not anything that's really mind blowing. Now there are some situations where I feel like she knows me better than me and brings up this trait, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, like, why did I know that about myself? I'm like, oh my, like, how is this possible? But it really does help out in the long run. But it's never really anything that's mind blowing or you've never thought about before, but it's just often said in a different way that clicks with you a little bit better. So this therapist in particular, I'm a very black and white person. So I often, you know, am very much a perfectionist. So I want, you know, I want to get it right or else it's just terrible. She always talked about being the black and white and how there's that gray area for imperfection. But it wasn't until I went to my counselor in Nashville that it really clicked with me. And what she said was, it's not either or, it's both and. And that was really powerful for me to understand that it's okay to, for example, somebody's hurt you, but you love that person. It's okay to still love that person, but also feel hurt. So both validating your feelings, but at the same time, not being incredibly bitter. So I cannot tell you how much I have learned about myself through therapy and how much I feel like it's helped me become a better nurse, a better friend, a better student, and a better daughter. There's also this concept of pre-notion that if you're at rock bottom, you need therapy. But it's never about, okay, well, maybe I'm just a little more stressed out at work than usual, and I just need to figure out how to cope with things. People think that maybe therapy is just a long-term thing, and really people go maybe for 2-3 sessions. I've had a few friends that have said, you know, I just need just a couple sessions with therapists, and it really helped me out. And as for me, you know, right now, you know, I'm walking through some different things that are tough, but then also just checking in on those things that need to be checked in on, like, hey, how are you doing as far as giving yourself grace in moments? Or how are you doing as far as making boundaries at work? So it can just, I call it an emotional check-in, emotional checkup. You know, instead of going, it's just a checkup for your brain and for your mind. It's like we go for checkups for our bodies. It's just saying, hey, how are you doing? And so, and that's often what I teach my kids too. It's not anything to be ashamed of. In fact, like, it's really powerful. And honestly, the more conversations I've had with people about it, the more I've realized about how many people that actually go to therapy, but we don't talk about it. So,
yeah, there have been a number of conversations I've had in professional settings where I, as in some sort of interjection, some sort of segue, I mentioned I have a therapy appointment today, or I was just talking to my therapist or whatever, and coworker or colleague does a bit of a double take, like I'm using it so casually or colloquially that it's like, you go to therapy? And yeah, it's exactly for what you just said. It's for that mental check-in. It's that mental checkup. I go to the gym a couple of times a week to, you know, maintain physical health. I go to my therapist once every 2 weeks, or if things are getting rough, every more often, to do that mental and emotional checkup, just to check in, make sure we're going, make sure we're sustaining. When you injure yourself and you are on the rebound, you go to physical therapy. When something's hard and you're bouncing back, you want to go talk to a therapist and figure out what's going on there. But it's interesting that our preparation styles are completely different in how we go to our therapist. But what our approach is very much similar to kind of taking it and going there. But you mentioned the being the part of the perfectionist there. And there's a quote that I looked up that is from one of my other favorite podcasts, You Made It Weird with Pete Holmes, which I'll probably reference way too many times over the course of our podcast. But there was a quote on there from an episode from the lead singer of Jimmy Eat World that as you were answering there, it stuck in my head. And I was just sorting some of these earlier tonight on my phone. So that's why I brought it back really quick. But his quote is from Jim Atkins: "The only thing you can control is being proud of your work." And so for me, that's something that I continually reinforce in myself and everything I do and all the projects that I do, where it may not be perfect. It may not be the home run. It may not be, whatever penultimate goal you have set out for on the first try, but it is something where I know I have the ability to be proud of the effort I put into it and the time and everything out of that. So for me, that's something that is always circulating in my mind when I'm talking about some of these things. And I may be beating myself up for things that I have, you know, falsely engendered shortcomings in my own head due to that kind of perfectionist complex. But those are, again, seeing people with that massive amount of success still having that type of internal battle as well is always interesting and eye-opening as well.
Oh, I mean, definitely. So I don't know. I just definitely, when you're a perfectionist, it's harder because, for example, my counselor may say something and I take it home and I expect to be perfect at it just because we talked about it in therapy. And it's like, no, you've created this whole, you've done this same habit for years and years and years. You don't just get rid of it just because you know something or just because you've done it for a day. It really is a process. And so I'm actually walking through a journey right now where I am learning how to have a healthier or a better relationship with food. Like I mentioned, I've struggled with disordered eating for a good part of my life. But one of the things is just giving yourself grace and letting it be a process. So these habits have been developed for 12 years. So, and when you go talk about something, it doesn't automatically unwind or unravel what's been done for the past 12 years. You have to put in the work. You may go two steps forward and one step back. And it's discouraging. Even though you know you're making progress, you still feel like there's so much more work to be done. But just if you can realize that it's a process and be proud of that and be proud of the work that you are doing, I think that's really key. Like I said, it's definitely hard. And it's one of those things that I've really had to work at over the years. And I still struggle with a lot, especially when it comes to school, wanting to have the best grades, wanting to be competitive. But just realizing that at the end of the day, just doing your best and then just be proud of what you've done. Give yourself grace and move on to the next day, because worrying about it and beating yourself up is just, it doesn't do anything to solve it. So
exactly. That's not going to go overnight. So you still have to live out the rest of it. So understanding that it is a process and living inside of that and working through that goes a long way for a lot of stability and kind of a benefactor to yourself. Why don't we pivot a little bit and jump into HeartCamp? How does HeartCamp fit into your overall journey? How do you hear about it? And what has your experience been since then? And have you taken any of what, as you mentioned, a lot of the discussion about self-care is almost the confirmation there. Have you taken anything else from HeartCamp into your current mental health activities and things like that?
Wow, HeartCamp. So I've been a fan of To Write Love on Our Arms for quite some time and have been following it on social media, Instagram, bought a couple t-shirts, followed Jamie on Instagram as well. And so when he brought up this idea of HeartCamp, I was thinking, oh my goodness, what is this? This is going to be the coolest thing ever. And I've been his fan for the longest time, had read his book and just really had stood by for a lot of what To Write Love has been doing for the mental health community. And so when he opened this thing up called HeartCamp, I looked at it and I was like, I can do this. And usually I'm not a very spontaneous person, but I just registered and bought a plane ticket. That's how I did it. And I honestly, it's one of the best things that's happened. So this past year has really been, a year of change for me. And I feel like HeartCamp really signified the beginning of that change. At the time of HeartCamp, I was going through a lot. I was about to start some really intensive therapy and just really was just very discouraged because I was just back in that same boat again, about around that same time the previous year. I also was having some struggles with my job and then also just gotten through a really rough season of school. So I was very worn, very exhausted at that point. And so first of all, getting to go to the beach was wonderful, even though it was 50 degrees, it was wonderful. Yeah. So I was very thankful for the beach. But then just getting to meet, second of all, just getting to meet all sorts of people from around the country, including Amanda and of course you too. It was just wonderful. I mean, I think it was the first night we went to the hotel bar and just hung out for a little while. And we went out to eat, toured around Melbourne. And then the second night, it was like a hotel. Every night we hung out at the hotel lobby. I remember that. But it was just, I don't know, just getting to really connect with other people that you had never met. But you just felt like we're family. It was just, it was so powerful. You were just, it was one big community and we walked into strangers, but we instantly connected and it was just amazing. And just to walk away feeling like you were supported and feeling like that you could talk to these people or call them up at any point was just really incredible. So as far as the heart, like the actual part of HeartCamp went, besides all the socializing, was just, I thought it was wonderful. I really thought Jamie did a great job as far as combining a lot of topics together, as far as talking about mental health, talking about To Write Love, talking about therapy, talking about like writing and then starting up something that actually means a lot. I remember we had a few people that were either had nonprofits or wanted to start nonprofits, and that was beautiful to see. We had Sierra come in and do some writing, and I love to write, and that's something I hadn't done in a long time. And so getting to really just engage back in that was incredible. And then just, I don't know, so HeartCamp really just reignited a lot of those creative sparks in me. And it also just made me realize I just to prioritize myself more. Walking away from Heart Camp, I really took some of those creative outlets back with me. Just making time to write more. And usually it's just for myself, but I've gotten to share some of my spoken word as well. It's given me the confidence to go and do different things like speak at the conference at the hospital that I work at.
That's awesome.
For ADHD. So I'm just feeling really, I also got a sense of empowerment from Heart Camp. Just knowing, I don't know, it's just, I'm more assertive now. I honestly don't know what it was, but I think just putting your passions first, putting yourself first, putting the things that you value first, and really just push to those things, I think was really helpful. And I just needed to hear that again. So as far as anything new in the self-care thing that Jamie brought up, I think the most important thing was just, again, just getting those creative outlets out. Because again, I had not been writing for years. I started writing when I was about in the fifth grade and loved it. I was writing poetry in middle school. I wrote fan fiction. And then high school, I wrote a little bit more. But really in college and when I was in nursing school and through all the transitions over the years, it's just really kind of faded. There are times where I still do write, but it wasn't really as often. And so just getting to go back and really just sink into that with Sierra was just one of my favorite moments. So yeah, just really making sure that I'm finding the time to really let those things that I love flourish and nourish, even if it's just for myself, was just really powerful. So man, I would do Heart Camp again in a heartbeat. It's camp for adults. Yep. I mean, what can I say? The only thing that we needed were maybe, you know, some inflatables or something or a big fire. That would have been nice with some s'mores. But, you know, all in all, I mean, but we can't have it all.
Can't complain.
It was pretty close. It was pretty close to that.
Yeah. So what you mentioned there as far as reconnecting back with your writing and feeling more empowered with your writing went a long way for me as well, based off of the fact that I've been in a corporate IT world for the entirety of my professional career. And that's all about distilling it down to the fewest amount of words to get your point across, bullet points, all of that stuff. So anytime I want to flesh something out, I've been conditioned, as you said earlier, you've been conditioned for 12 years on some things. I've been conditioned for 12 years on things to write a certain way that, you know, the details and a lot of the figurative language is unnecessary. So when I end up having those thoughts or the compulsion to write in that certain way, it just feels like it's something I need to push down or kind of ignore. But being able to understand where that's coming from, and as you mentioned, the topics between to write love, mental health, writing, authenticity, being able to all bring that back into that, that's all part of the same spectrum, or that can be part of the same spectrum. They don't have to be mutually exclusive. One of the things that you mentioned there was the fact that it felt like everyone, even though they were strangers, were coming into a pre-existing or a already comfortable community. And that's one of the themes that we've had across some of the interviews so far for the podcast, was that it definitely felt like a community that folks were already a part of. And then even before that, as more folks share their stories, even across Heart Camp families and groups, it ends up seeing where there are definitely, however you may define yourself and kind of coming into that role, that whatever kind of label you put on yourself, that there ends up being that many more people in the group that label themselves the exact same way, so that there's a much greater cross-section between the groups and that you're already kind of co-members of many more communities than you already realize. So what exactly does community mean to you to be able to walk into something like that and have it be comfortable and empowering and something like that?
It means everything. It's very hard to say that it means just a little, or, you know, community over the past several years has had such an incredible impact in my life. I really started finding community when I plugged in with the college ministry that I was involved in, and started finding a small group there and friends there, and just really plugging into that ministry as well as other people that I started connecting with. And as my college career went on and as nursing school went on, I really found that community to be incredibly powerful, because there were days where I didn't believe in myself, or I didn't believe that I could get through nursing school or get through the next test or just get through the week. And just having other people that were like me, even though maybe we had walked through different lives or different backgrounds, just being able to have those people to come back to was so powerful. And to know that I could call them anytime and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this right now. Can we just go grab coffee and talk, because I really just need it right now. And they could, and vice versa, they could do mm-hmm. the same thing. Going to Nashville and then coming back was also a big deal, was just finding a local church that was like that. Now, coming into Heart Camp, it was interesting because I had never been part of experience that wasn't religious based, that had that kind of community. But it was really neat. I just felt like everybody was so accepting of one another. And I think because a lot of us, even though we've walked incredibly different walks of life, we had all been through such difficult things. We were all there for a similar reason, to talk about things that were real. We weren't there to make chit chat or mm-hmm. to talk about something that was just didn't really matter. Like, let's really be honest. There are things in this world that really don't matter. I mean, yes, you know, maybe clothes are great. Yes, maybe, you know, beautiful houses are great. But at the end of the day, like, what's going to really make an impact? So I think because we were all there ready to talk about what was really important and ready to be open, I think that's what made Heart Camp so special. And that's why so many people connected, was because we were able to talk about, you know, our different values, our different experiences, our different passions and gifts. And again, like you said, a lot of us did have those similar passions, and we could quote unquote label ourselves, even with the people that were different. We could still very much, I think, relate to them. I mean, I felt so connected because they felt so compelled to share their story, and mm-hmm. their stories were incredibly powerful. And that was another thing too, was people were so willing to just share their story, and not just, I was born and raised here, I graduated from here with this degree. People were talking about things that impacted their lives both very positively, but also very negatively. Mm-hmm. We have people come out with stories of abuse, stories of anxiety, depression, wanting to kill themselves. We had some people come out and say, you know what, I've struggled with being homosexual. And it just really brought everybody together, because we realized at the end of the day that there's so much more in this life than again, those things that I talked about, just materialism. There's being there for one another. It's helping one another when we're not at our best. And for me, you know, that includes working with people that have emotional and behavioral health issues. Community means a lot to me. They definitely, I know I've kind of spun into a little side note there, but
no worries at all.
Community is vital in my life. I think without community, definitely this world would not be as beautiful. And I personally believe life would not be worth living as much if it wasn't for community.
There's no need to apologize for the tangents or the multiple threads there, because it pulls your story together so beautifully, going back to exactly what you started with as far as the helping profession and the fact that you have community, so that there are that many more people in your immediate vicinity, both literally and figuratively, that can help you out, that you can band together when somebody else in community needs your collective help. Because as we've all learned, whatever you're dealing with right now, and however heavy that is, there's somebody else who may be dealing with something completely different or the exact same thing, and it's just as heavy, and they don't think anybody else is feeling the same thing. So coming into that community, it ends up understanding that everybody has each of those individual battles, and then coming together, banding together with all the different personalities, with all the different backgrounds, all the different trajectories, for lack of a better word, ends up making it so that you all can, like you just said, it makes life worth living, and it makes it that much better. And the ability to come together and band together is pretty beautiful. You mentioned a couple of spoken word things that you've done, as well as you mentioned writing for some blogs and everything. Is there anything there that you wanted to plug or promote, or anything else that you're working on in addition to jumping back into your writing?
I got to talk about ADHD back in September for our pediatric professional development day for the children's hospital that I work at. And I probably would have never done that had it not been for Heart Camp. It was the first professional speaking engagement that I've ever been part of. And it was very much a learning experience, just getting to prepare for all of that. I got to use my creative juices still. I got to make different diagrams, different ways of learning. Got to share a video, a TED Talk, where a girl was talking about her struggles to ADHD. Got to share just the myths behind ADHD and the truth about it. And so even though it wasn't exactly quote unquote writing, it was still something that teaching and education, and just again, just putting a passion to break down walls of stigma. I still got to do that through that engagement. So yeah, but nothing at this time, but hopefully when school slows down a little bit, that'll be more of a thing. But right now, school's the priority.
Main focus. Yeah. Well, and that's good that you have the ability to even, feel empowered to have those creative juices flow in another way, where it may not be in the exact medium that you may, again, set your perfectionist desires to have, but it is still something where you're able to have an outlet for them through development days and things like that. And even better, the ability to combine the inspiration to share and some of that that create those creative juices in a professional and dynamic way. So that's pretty awesome. So we'll start to wrap it up with a two-part question that are two different questions, but basically the same sentiment between it. So if there's one thing that someone can take away from your story, what would you want that to be?
I think the one thing I would like people to take away is to be transparent with your life. When you shut yourself away from the world and you hide in your story, you hide in your struggles, it leads to such darkness and such destruction. And I was at that point there, had lived hiding behind this mask up until about college. And then I just started not caring and just started talking about my life and started talking about what was actually going on. And it was one of the most freeing things I could have ever done for myself. So just being transparent, being honest. Some of the most incredible insights I've found out about friends, or some of the most incredible conversations I've had is me, you know, responding to a question such as how are you, or what's been new lately, and saying, well, you know, I've been struggling with my depression lately, or, you know, I went to my therapist today, and having them go, wait a second, I go to a therapist too. Wait a second. Like, I struggle with that too. Like, and all of a sudden your friendship just goes into that deeper bond, or all of a sudden, you're a lot more free. And, even through a lot of my experiences, I've been able to better relate to my patients and better relate to the people that I'm seeing at clinical, and being able to say, you know what, I've been on the other side too. And so just being transparent with your story, because you don't know how you can change somebody's life and what deeper relationships you can build. So
excellent. Yeah, those are, I am a huge fan of all the points that you just made there. So, that is, a great one, and one that I'm very much a fan of. So the other question there is, and I'll ask you the question, give you some Jeopardy time to think while I explain the reasoning behind the question. But the question is, what is one song that you'd want to share about your story, or what is one song that relates to your story?
Oh my goodness. I love music. So this is a difficult one for me. The first one that comes into my head is a song by Pink, and it's called Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. She performed it at the 2018 Grammys, actually, and killed it, by the way. But I believe it came out around when the Me Too campaign was coming out. She just talks about the persistence of just continuing to fight, to battle on and fight on, and just continue to just persist and know that your heart, or like your heart, can't be broken. Or you know, it is gonna be tough, but if you just keep persisting and you know, you will start winning that battle. Oh, I really like Coldplay too. Coldplay is a good one. Let's see. I really love, one of my tattoos is actually inspired by a Coldplay song.
That's awesome.
Fix You is one that I love to sing to and cry to. It's one that I think a lot about when it comes to mental health and helping people. And then also, kind of on a more serious note, my uncle actually completed suicide back in 2016. And so
Sorry.
that's a song that I definitely, I don't know, sometimes if I just need to cry, I just cry to it. And but it's just,
That's an excellent mix and an excellent answer to that question. So that's it didn't disappoint in any way, shape, or form. So that's good to hear. Thank you so very much for joining us this week. We hope you had as good a time listening as we had recording the interview. Don't forget to check out anthologiesofhope.com/playlist for all the awesome songs that will get added each week. You can find us on social media at Anthologies of Hope on Facebook and Instagram, and Anthologies Pod on Twitter. It would be great if you could subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google, and leave us a review. As always, remember, everyone has a story, and it's about time we start listening.